Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism. Hi, welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking Radio Show. This show is Understanding Autism, and my name is Kim Isaac. I'm an autism specialist and a certified RDI program consultant, and I'm a co-host of this show. And I also have my favorite co-host, Paul Loudon.
Your only co-host.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. I got to give a shout out to Dave Isaac, the producer and creative director of the Breakthrough Family radio shows in general. We really appreciate you including us in your family of shows. And Paul is 29 years old, and he has Asperger's syndrome, and he was diagnosed when he was 23. And he and I, we do this show twice a month if you're a first-time listener, and we would love to share our shows with you on iTunes. We have podcasts for free. You can download of previous shows. And Paul, anything we need to add before we introduce our guest?
Well, you can find our podcast on iTunes if you just search for Understanding Autism, or visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/Understanding Autism Radio, where you can, again, find the podcast and more information.
Yes. So today we have a very special guest, somebody that I'm so excited to introduce. I've been wanting to get him on the show for quite a long time. And he's somebody who I greatly respect, who's really changed my life professionally and personally. And that is Dr. Steven Gutstein. He is the founder and developer of RDI Connect, and RDI stands for Relationship Development Intervention. And he is online from Houston, Texas, and he's going to talk with us today about RDI. Dr. Gutstein, are you there?
I sure am.
Hi, Kim. Hi. I'm so happy to have you.
Hi.
Nice to meet you. Well, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you. I could barely contain myself. Seriously, Paul was like, are you okay? I was just so excited.
My Lord. What a buildup, huh?
I know. Well, thank you for coming on. I know you're so busy, and I'm just excited because I can't wait for you to share more about RDI. There's been such an evolution, and right now it's just there's so many awesome things happening that you've spent so much time creating. And so what I was hoping is to start off, you could talk a bit about, you know, what is RDI?
Well, RDI really started out as a way of empowering parents and family members to play a much larger role in helping their children and children. We use the word children of all ages, because everyone can be a child if they have a parent, to really do the work necessary to guide those children to achieve as much as possible in their development. And the difference, I think, between RDI and maybe other methods is we started out based on what we knew from our recent research in the condition about what the deficits were, what the problems were in autism that were eventually going to be restricting people's lives, their quality of lives. And we started out with the premise that those are the things that we wanted to address. We wanted to teach parents the methods of helping their children to develop those abilities, those foundations that were going to be someday going to grow into things that they could do as adults, as teenagers, as adults, to have a high quality of life. So I think that was a big difference. And it's really been an amazing journey to empower parents in this way. And, of course, as you know, Kim, we've come a long way from our beginnings, which are really only about 12 or 13 years ago.
I know. I have to say, I love the progression and evolution of it all. It really excites me because I feel like it already started off amazing. I mean, the theory and the concepts and what we were learning and how we were implementing things, and it just keeps getting better and better. So, yeah, I know. It's amazing, though, to think that, well, I guess I've been involved in RDI for about 8 years now or 9 years, and I save everything. I have everything you've ever given us in boxes. I have like a storage unit full of stuff. But anyways,
if I go back to the old stuff and pretend it's the new stuff, you can call me on it. Right?
I know. So
we've been there before.
So we're curious. Maybe you could share with listeners. So what inspired you to develop this these programs?
Well, we can go back to my own childhood, but I'd rather start with my professional childhood, if you will, that my commitment really as a psychologist has been no matter what setting I've been, to try to understand how to empower parents and family members in crises. I actually started out my first real job many years ago now, over 30 years ago, was at Texas Children's Hospital, where I was a young professor there and running the pediatric psychology program way over my head. But really got involved there with trying to understand how we can help parents there to not just be sort of passive, you know, passively sort of there. How could they can really play a role in helping their children? And I moved on to that to work with other populations as well, other people as well, and other groups, and did applied research and program development. But it's always been towards the same thing. It's always been towards the same mission, which is knowing that the family unit has an incredibly powerful but usually untapped strength, and looking at conditions where that has really been underutilized. And when I got involved with autism, it was amazing to me. I've always been, I shouldn't say got involved, because I've always been involved with autism, but I sort of gotten, about maybe 20 years ago, got more drawn into it for some reason. What was amazing to me was parents were being asked to sit on the sidelines. That here we had these children who needed very basic guidance, who were having real difficulty, with some of the things that a typical six-month-old child would have no trouble with. And they were being told to sit on the sidelines, and they were being replaced by students sometimes, by people with very little training who come to their house, work with their child, and leave them totally unempowered. And it didn't make any sense to me. It just didn't. That was the prevailing model. Unfortunately, in some ways, it still is, in many parts of this country and the world, the prevailing model. As parents are pushed to the sidelines, and they're told that some other person is going to come into their home and treat this thing, which, unfortunately does not occur. So it really, it seemed to me a really important area that needed to be addressed, that we needed to find ways to help family members to be able to play a significant role, and I believe the central role. I believe that it was in the family that we were going to really find the key, the heart of this, of helping these children, that the parents were not, We knew long ago that the parents were not to blame for this. So to push them on the sidelines was really ridiculous. But they were capable people. They were, almost all of our parents are extremely capable people, extremely able people, but they just needed to learn, they need to learn, how do I guide a child with these types of problems? How do I develop the mind of a child who is not contributing to this relationship what is sort of typically expected, that you sort of take for granted? How do we develop that in this child? How do we develop what we call a guiding relationship, which we know from every bit of science about child development, we know is the key to developing a mind, to developing someone who could be a problem solver and a decision maker and can be independent, that without that guiding relationship, that is not going to happen. And here were these very capable people who were being pushed aside. So it was a very powerful, I think, compelling reason to get involved in it.
Yes, definitely. And I know, working with families myself, I used to be one of those people that would go into the home and honestly, it's interesting, because I think instinctively something always felt a little bit strange, especially when working on some of the social emotional stuff. I kept thinking, I don't know these people as well as their parents do. This is a little awkward. It always felt a little bit strange. And I was hoping, hearing you talk and thinking about what I've noticed about some of the, I guess one of the tragedies of all of this is that parents, there's the feedback system that that occurs or doesn't occur, however it ends up coming, kind of in an atypical way due to the child not contributing to the relationship, it creates a snowball effect. And I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit, the ramifications of not developing a guiding relationship.
And I think this is where the RDI has really tried to focus in and being really different than a lot of the other sort of programs that focus on just techniques or teaching parents some kind of skill. That what we know is we typically are starting out with parents who are capable people. But like anyone else, if you don't get the feedback, you can't guide someone who isn't giving you any feedback about whether what you're doing is right or wrong, or you need to do a little bit more or a little bit less of something. And when you're dealing with a typical infant, of course, typically developing infant, not a child with autism, you're just getting constant feedback about that. You may not even realize what you're getting, because often you're making your adjustments without unconsciously, but you're making them constantly. And it becomes a sort of dance between the child, the infant, and the parent. Well, autism, what we see is each child, for a variety of different reasons, not one cause, but for a variety of reasons, that system breaks down. The children are unable to provide the feedback, the continual information that parents need to make the decisions to become effective guides. Now, this is not because of the parents, but again, you could be the best guide in the world, the best parent in the world, and you're still going to fail in this job if you're not getting that feedback. And that's been the conundrum of autism, of course. Now, what happens, of course, is you, as a parent, if you're not getting that, you're going to feel like a failure. You're going to feel like it's a disaster. If your primary role, primary identity as a parent, I can tell you all day long that this is not your fault. And, of course, it isn't. And it really doesn't help very much. You still feel horrible. And you still feel terrible. And it's a devastating blow. So we have to help parents to recover from that blow as well. We have to teach them that there is a way that they can be guided. And what we've done is we've broken down this process of guiding. We've also developed a very comprehensive assessment system so that we can try to understand for each child why this system is not working, why the child is not able to provide the feedback parent needs, why the child is not able to function like what we call an apprentice or a mental apprentice, if you will, helping to develop their own mind, and to try to address those issues first. And at the same time, teach parents to slow down the process, to give them a chance to recover from that feeling they have, the desperation they're feeling, to give them the hope that they can achieve this, to empower them, and to teach them that by taking this process that typically occurs in a very rapid sort of unconscious way, and slowing it down, making it deliberate, right, and again, addressing what the obstacles, the very different obstacles that the child may present, but reducing those sufficiently so that the child can provide feedback in a simpler, quieter environment, and parents can understand it, we can restore that guiding relationship. We can give these families hope. But it takes a lot of sensitivity. It takes the family consultant to be real careful to really take care of that family, to realize what they've been through, even the strongest people, to realize that we have to give them hope again, but not, you know, there's no quick fix hope, no quick cure hope, but we have to restore their strength, we have to give them support, and we also have to give them the tools to be successful.
Yes, I know, and I've been so fortunate to have seen how this does change the lives of families, and I want to continue this discussion. We're going to actually take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to finish talking about the family consultation program. Okay, we'll be right back with more Understanding Autism.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Your body is the greatest gift that you will ever be given. How well are you taking care of yours? Hey everyone, this is Journey Reeves, owner of Mind Body Unlimited. More important than time or money, your health is the secret to a truly wealthy life. We can customize an exercise and diet program that greatly enhances your quality of life. If you are sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, give us a buzz at 480-370-7768. That's 480-370-7768 to schedule your free, no-obligation consultation today.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Welcome back to the Breakthrough Thinking Radio Show. This is the Understanding Autism block. We've got a great guest to hear. We've got Dr. Gutstein, who is the founder of RDI Connect, and he's talking to us a little bit about his program. He's been telling us that one of the main focuses of it is that many interventions and therapies out there focus on having an expert come in and lead or teach the child, and he felt that it was more important to work on the relationship between the parent or family and the person receiving help. And so that's been a big determining factor in how he went about starting this. Dr. Gutstein, could you talk a little bit about what sort of role you're looking for parents to take up in the
family consultation program?
Yes. And, you know, we call it the guiding relationship role. And what I've done is, and done this over the years, is I spent a long period of time, myself and with other researchers, really sort of deconstructing, or if you will, dissecting what goes on in the early years of a parent-child relationship that is critical in forming these types of what we call dynamic abilities, the ability to be for flexible thinking and rapid adaptation, what you might call situational awareness, complex decision-making, you know, dealing with ambiguity, dealing with uncertainty, all of the core issues that even the quote-unquote highest-functioning people on the autism spectrum have difficulty with. And what we've realized is we've been able to take this apart and say, okay, we can understand this relationship that usually gets talked about very intuitively, very much sort of poetically, and we were able to break it down and look at it as a series of steps or a series of things that you could actually teach to parents. Now, the reality is, if you have a typically developing child, you probably may not need to learn any of those things because you just take it for granted. This guiding relationship is just occurring, right? And so
that's actually something I've brought up when trying to explain a few things to people. I know that I've run into that issue you've talked about where people sort of have this assumption that internal processes work the same for everyone, is that when you look at a child, they learn how to walk by observing the people around them, that a parent doesn't sit down and take their leg and show them the motions and show them how their legs doing the motions help them walk or anything. And that if you had a child who didn't learn how to walk, you wouldn't really know how to help them with it because it's something you were never taught. You just developed as you grew.
That's right, Paul. And the other thing about autism is people with autism are stigmatized in the following way, that whether people realize it or not, there's a very strong belief that people with autism are not capable of this type of functioning. And so people don't even try. So the argument would be against what I was doing would be, well, so what if you train the parents? These kids are not able to do this. They're never going to be able to do this. That's why they're called having autism, which is a ridiculous statement, of course. Because what we find, and we find it very clearly in about 95% of the kids that we see, the families that we see, is that if we can slow down initially, can create a simpler environment without as much noise, without as much unclarity about where should I focus, what should I focus on, that we find that children, again, we're using the term of all ages, can learn to become really good mental apprentices, really good mental apprentices, sometimes better than neurotypical kids. But they need initially a certain type of environment. They need a simpler, when I say simpler, I don't mean dumber. I just mean less noisy, right? Less stuff going on, less simultaneous things going on. Having people do the things that parents might do very rapidly in an intuitive way, let them do it slower at first. Let them do it more deliberately so the person with autism can perceive it, can experience it, and also can experience themselves in it. What happens is, if you have autism, and I'm talking to Paul here, who has, you know, this, so, you know, it's kind of weird to talk about it, but I'm going to say it anyway, is that, and many, many adults who have told me, is that when they're in a relationship, an interaction, they lose themselves. They lose focus on them. They can't see themselves in what they're doing in that relationship. They're so busy responding or reacting to it or trying to give the right response that they don't form the experiential memory of, okay, where, what's happening to me? What am I learning about me here, right? What am, Paul, am I making sense?
Oh, absolutely. Kim and I, when we were meeting yesterday, we were actually talking about specifically the sense of taste. I can't remember what things taste like. I cannot replay the taste of things in my head because what I have, instead of a memory of the taste, I have a memory of the description of the taste. There might be words like lemony or whatever, but there's not an actual taste because usually when I'm tasting something, I'm too busy actually thinking about what I'm tasting rather than just tasting it. And that's the way it is with a lot of other experiences, is that, that my way of dealing with a lot of the problems I've run into is to become a much more active thinker about things, and that doesn't allow me to allow the subconscious processes to really interact with them in the same way.
We call that interesting, too. We call that what's missing is what we call experience-based learning, which is to be able to just have that experience, to learn from it in a very integrated way, and to be able to develop your sort of own experience-based book, if you will, in your own mind, about what the world is like in a positive way. I don't mean in an avoidant way. Unfortunately, I think for a lot of people with autism, you know, the experience-based book they have is avoid the experiences, you know, stay away from them.
Well, I know that I have a hard time sort of putting the intensity of an experience on the scale. I remember that was something was bad, but I don't remember well how bad it was. So I'm more hesitant about, you know, going through with it because I can't really judge the risk versus reward. I may know it's bad, but I may know that what I get, I have a hard time telling if what I would get from it is better than whatever negative experience I'd have to go through to get there.
And that's a really important thing. And so that this becomes the key. What you're talking about really is the key to everything. Because where I'm really an advocate, and I'm an advocate for families, but even more so for the need for people with ASD from the very earliest time to learn about their own experience, to be given the opportunity, to experience themselves, right? And without the push, without the forcing them to learn this, learn that, say this word, what is this, what is that, to really have somebody help them. And that's what a guide does. What a guide does is just leave you to run around, but carefully sets up experiences where one at a time, slowly, you can perceive yourself involved with the world in some meaningful way, and you can capture something meaningful and significant, right, that you can then use and apply in your future life. And you're building this experience-based knowledge bank that's continuously then being upgraded, becoming refined, becoming more discriminated, and you're being given the opportunity to do that. With what happens in autism, I believe, is that that natural ability doesn't click in, and so the, you know, the guiding relationship isn't working. And instead of guiding, what parents wind up having to do is instructing, prompting, right? People sort of tell you, give you skills, tell you what to do, tell you how to think, and you don't perceive yourself. You don't have the thousands of experiences that you need to just slow down and say, okay, what does this, not negatively, I'm saying, what does this experience, what's the meaning of this, how can I use this in a future tense, how can I, what should I save in this experience? Let's talk about experience a second, because the key of experience, when we talk about experience-based knowledge, is the idea that you can go have an experience and you can take something from it that becomes productive for you in the future.
That's actually something Kim and I have touched on in the show is several times the difference between an outside-in development where you teach the skills and hope that those learned skills will then develop an understanding of how and why to use them well versus teaching sort of the motivations and not necessarily teaching but helping to develop the motivations and goals where you create – you can either tell someone you need to make eye contact when you're talking with someone, you need to watch body language and interpret it because you're supposed to be making them more comfortable, or you can create an urge to make the people around you more comfortable, and then they will find their own ways. They will develop a need to make that eye contact because they can see how it's helpful or feel how it's helpful in creating that additional level of comfort when having a discussion.
Right, and what we teach our parents to do very early is to set up the situations where the children can see themselves making decisions. And even at the earliest, even the child is not talking yet, you think, well, how can you make a decision? We're not talking about a decision of should I join the Army or should I get married. We're talking about a very simple decision. I hold out my hand to you, for instance, but I don't hold it out in a way that tells you you must take my hand. I hold it out sort of halfway, right, towards you, so that, and I teach you that it's okay to think about that and say, well, do I want to take this guy's hand or not? And make a decision about it rather than just an automatic, oh, when someone holds their hand out, I'm supposed to hold out my hand, right? And to perceive yourself then making that decision, perceiving yourself learning from that decision, was it a good idea, was it not, and then building on that, perceiving yourself as an active decision maker. So what our guides do is they're not, when we talk about teaching, yes, that we have goals, we have objectives, but number one, they see themselves as what we call potentiators. They're there to provide experiences, first of all, for their children to perceive themselves as competent, to perceive themselves as decision makers, and to gradually perceive that they can learn from their own experiences. One of the most exciting things to me that we're doing now is we're taking this concept of experience-based learning, and we're building up these knowledge banks for people with autism, but we're doing them online in the cloud, because for a lot of people with autism, I don't know if this is true for people, it's very hard to access your own personal experience when you need it. The knowledge of your own experience. Actually, it's very hard for me, and I don't have autism. But we're teaching people to do that, to be able to construct their own experiences. This isn't like me telling you, right? It's you say, okay, you know what? From this experience, I learned that to be competent, this is what helps me to be competent, X, right? Personalized. I want to store that in some way so that when I'm facing that situation again and I'm being ready for it, I can immediately access that, right? Mm-hmm. And so what you wind up doing is seeing your experience as a way that you can take things and use them to talk to your future self, okay? And actually, by putting it in the cloud, what we've done is now you'll be able to use your cell phone whenever you need it to say, okay, here's how I've categorized my experience. Here's how I classify it, right? This type of situation. Okay, I'm getting ready for it. Okay, what have I learned about me in this situation, right? Very empowering. Not what have you taught me, you expert. It's personally, you're a personal expert. What have I learned about me that makes me successful in this situation? And it's very empowering that we're trying to do. So we're trying to create now this guiding process, and we're trying to turn it, you know, and we'll talk about this more next week in the next program, the Dynamic Intelligence, into a lifelong development process. But it starts out with parents helping their children to see that the parent is playing this essential role of helping the child to perceive themselves, to perceive their own competence, their own decision-making. And that's the key. Rather than instructing you, prompting you, I'm gradually showing you who you can be as a person, that you can make decisions, thinking through the types of situations that are just challenging for you, a little one step ahead of where you are now, so that you can get the experience of gradually making those decisions in more and more complex situations, adding one little piece at a time of complexity, and gradually perceive yourself as a very competent person in the world. That's what our parents are learning to do, and it's very specific. We teach them how to assess that in a very specific way, how to be very clear, how to slow down, how to be very thoughtful about it, how to evaluate themselves as guides, and how to continually be aware of, you know, the need to upgrade, to need to develop this process. But that's what's so exciting. When we see the kids who have been prompted or have been treated like they don't have this capability, starting to perceive themselves and saying, you know, I know one of my favorite things, my wife, you know, Rochelle, is also my co-founder, co-director, and one of the simplest things, one of the most beautiful things she came back to me one night with and said, you know, one of the little boys that I work with in the families went to his mother out of nowhere and was thinking. And he said, Mom, I've been thinking. She said, oh, really? Oh, what? He said, you know, I'm a boy who can do hard things. Hmm. And, you know, I always remember that statement because it's such a critical, pivotal statement of what we're trying to do. That I'm a person who can do hard things. I'm not quote-unquote autism, whatever that means, right? Because it doesn't mean anything. I'm not a stereotype. I'm not this person you want me to try to make me into, this one-dimensional. I'm a person who can do hard things. Yeah, maybe I have this condition, or I have this, but I'm still a person who can do hard things, and I can do challenging things. Well, if you want to sum up what RDI is about, that's really what RDI is about.
I was going to say that actually parallels. I have a large interest in video games and the theories behind game design. And one of the important things that is the difference between a good game and a bad game isn't how often the player fails, but when they fail, if they understand why they failed and how to attempt to do it better next time. That a good game is a game that makes this information available in some way so that when a player is having a hard time, the resources are available for them to figure out how to improve the situation. And that sounds sort of like what you're talking about, that it's not about doing, you know, the right thing or the wrong thing necessarily, but being able to move forward at whatever rate works for you to understand, next time maybe I'll change this, or next time I learned this.
Well, I think that's right. I think that, you know, you're talking about, for you, that's the best video game, which says something really neat about you. You know, it's not how many people can I murder and blow up. It's what am I learning so that I can do that? And I think, you know, it's interesting that you can take a lot of games, and if you come at them with that attitude, some you can't. You can really think that way if you get the right feedback to try to understand that. You know, I was thinking about a game like Angry Birds. Everybody knows Angry Birds. It's really silly.
Pretty much.
But you know what? I like it, and I think about it. I think about when I deliberately, when I get to a new level, I make all the mistakes on purpose.
Yeah, you see what works and doesn't work. You see the way things fall apart, and the way they fell apart gives you a clue to how they'll fall apart next time when you do something different.
Right, and I start to learn also the thinking of the game makers in terms of the usual things they do to do that, but also just how to get that, you know, how to win that round. But the other thing about gaming, you know, it's interesting you bring up gaming, because we see that where we're moving towards is really we're trying to synthesize the best of three, really right now two things, but eventually it might be three. One is face-to-face work when we do our RDI work. The other is online, what we can provide for people online. We've developed an incredible online resource and community, right, for our families, and hopefully it'll be for our students as well in the next year. And then the third thing, I think, is what you're talking about, simulations and gaming and simulations. And, of course, gaming gets a bad rap because so many games are all about blood and killing and such. But I think gaming potentially and simulations can really be a third wheel in there, because you can program them to do things like you're saying. You can also program them to add, in other words, if I have certain things that are harder for me to do, I can add those to a game. I mean, you know, someday we can do this, or we could really do this now, where we could actually personalize the complexity of a game so that I have an easier time with X, you have an easier time with Y, I have an easier time visually, you have an easier time auditorily. We add, it's not that we don't add the visual auditory, we add the vulnerability, but we add it at a slower pace. Mm-hmm. So that we're getting more complexity, we're getting more able to deal with it, but in a way that's not overwhelming, right, or it's so off-putting that we quit. And we can also add levels of complexity, the amount of noise, the amount of complexity, the amount of thinking and decision-making based on what you've been able to accomplish up to this point. So you really get the sense of challenge. What does challenge mean? You get the feedback, you get the resources. So, you know, I think there's a real potential. I know we're getting off the subject, but we'll talk about that next week. But interesting you say that, because there's a potential. Now, with our, we're careful about gaming because right now, these, you know, children, as you know, can be with autism because they're not having success in other areas, and because they don't feel like they can be autonomous in areas. People are always telling them what to do and telling them how to think and telling them where to look. I mean, can you imagine? Well, of course, you don't have to imagine it, Paul. A lot of people telling you where to put your eyeballs. I mean, that's the craziest thing I ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why? That's really insulting. You know, look here, look here, look here. Well, you know why people look at things? Because they think there's something there to look at, not because somebody tells them to look there, right?
Right. Yeah,
exactly.
Imagine all these kids who are being told, well, no wonder they're going to get involved in video games, where the video game's not telling them where to look all day and how to act, you know, what to do.
It offers them the feeling of personal agency that they may be missing in their day-to-day life.
So with our kids, it's interesting. We have a much lower rate of video game addicts in our kids because they are getting that personal agency. At least when they're at home. Now, the problem we have, of course, is translating that to school situations where sometimes you know, there's, and we can talk about that another time. But what happens with their families is not that they're in control. They're not the bosses of their home by any means. They're just kids. But they're getting to see themselves making decisions that are reasonable decisions. They're getting to see themselves as being able to learn from the experience. And I think you hit it on the head. That's the key. I can have experience. I can have an experience that where I can stop and I can perceive and experience what it is that's valuable for me to know into the future, take that with me, and continue to grow and develop. That is incredibly motivating. That's incredibly empowering.
And especially, it seems important to see the results of your actions, to see the positive or negatives that came back and have the opportunity to understand them rather than just suffering the consequences.
And what we do is we show that what you're looking at when you evaluate is the decision-making, not you as a person, right? It's not you or you're bad or you're wrong. It's, we talk about this as a better way type of philosophy where what you're learning is, let's see if you can figure out a better way. And it doesn't mean that, you know, if you don't, you're bad or you're good. It's just, well, let's see. Is there a better way to make that decision, right? And so our goals are really about what we call better way goals. They're not about, you know, right and wrong goals, right? And the feedback you get is, well, I think that decision, I'd like to try that decision a different way and see if it works better, right? Not that you failed it, but let me see if I can do that and it will work better for me. So we also teach our kids. We start teaching our parents to gradually develop this sort of culture of more being like a scientist about yourself, your own needs, and your own personalization, that you're starting to learn to think about yourself not as a disease or, or something wrong with you, but of thinking of, good, let me discover my operating system. I'm not going to be able to, my mind isn't going to work like everyone else's. And that's true for anybody, all right? It's not just true for people with autism. Let me see what works for me. It's that personalization. That's what I used to say. And so, you know, I can be an expert, but I don't have to tell you how you should solve a certain problem. I don't think I could ever do that. What I would do as an expert, let me talk about as a guide for you, let's just say, this is out of nowhere, but I'm saying, is to say, look, I'm going to help you discover what works for you. You see what I mean?
Create them room to grow into.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And I just wanted to add, too, as we're talking about this, I'm like smiling really big. One thing is I'm just so proud of Paul, and I don't mean that in a condescending way, but I just feel like really good about the work he and I have done together. And I just wanted to say for all the adults that are listening, we are talking about, you know, parents being trained to be guides. If you're an adult out there that doesn't have an available guide, you can still take part in this program. And I've been Paul's guide for his primary guide for quite a while, and I just wanted adults out there to know that that this is still for you. We would just have to either your consultant would be your guide, or we could find somebody that you were comfortable with. But I just want adults to know out there that we're talking about parents. The process is still it's very similar. It's just that you would have a consultant function as a guide. So I just wanted to throw that in there as I'm. Just listening to Paul talk about his things, I'm so proud of him.
And I think, moreover, you know, for someone like you, Paul, I have no idea if you'd be interested, but we are starting a guide training program for guides that don't have to be parents, because we realize that guiding is something that isn't just for young children and parents. And, you know, people like Paul, and I'm going to just say this about you, Paul, as if you're not there, I'm sorry, could easily become guides themselves if they had, I don't know, you may not have any interest in it, he doesn't have to have one, but if he wanted to, he's at the point where he could actually learn to be a guide.
And he'd be an amazing guide.
Paul would have incredible insight, you know, along with guiding, he has incredible insight into the process, into what the child is going through, which is a critical piece for any guide, is to try to understand the operating system, the mental operating system of the person you're guiding, right, to gradually learn more about it, not assume that it's yours. You see, that's the key, is not to assume my mind works the same as your mind. It doesn't have to, and it never has to. My goal is not for your mind to be my mind, right?
Yeah.
My goal is to be a facilitator, to help you to be curious and to set up constructive experiences where you can start to learn how your mind works most productively.
Well, that's one thing Kim and I have also talked about in the past, is the decision-making process. Don't assume that don't work back from the decision through your own thought process and say, if I did this, this is why I would have done it. There is a decision-making process going on there, and you really need to figure out how to work out what their first cause was rather than how you would have gotten to that decision.
Well, that's right. and you need to explore. You need to feel free. And this is one of the problems where, you know, a lot of our kids, even when they get a little bit older or become adults, don't have any form or area where they can explore and experiment without feeling like they're going to get humiliated or put down or criticized. And I don't mean weird experiment. I mean experiment running around naked. I'm talking about experiments where you can explore, you know, what works for me, what way of deciding things, what way of coming up with a decision, right, is most productive based on the results that I get. And it's not so much that the criticism is things move so fast. Everybody's expecting performance in our society that there's very little value for planning and for preparing and for evaluating yourself and learning from your experience. This isn't just a problem in autism now, we find, and we'll talk about that more next week. This is becoming a problem in our entire society.
Well, that's another thing that parallels to that is a lot of the rules of society, laws as well as just social rules, come from the idea of common sense. So when something goes wrong, when you do something wrong, someone tells you, you've done this wrong, the assumption is that you'll be able to figure out why that was wrong because the rules are common sense, so clearly if you were doing it wrong, you were either doing it out of ill will or some other negative emotion rather than just not understanding the disconnect between, you know, the rules that you thought you knew and what you're actually doing. So there's that assumption. The whole idea of common sense actually is a hard time for people on the spectrum where we don't have the same common sense as what other people feel common sense is. And now not everyone has the same common sense anyway. There's a pretty big, you know, gap true. There. But it falls within a general range that a lot of times we will fall outside of.
Yeah, and I think that what's interesting is that we can – a lot of times you can replace common sense with – people call common sense or rules – with providing your own sort of experiential book so that it's not so much learning – you know, I don't know the rules of society, and I've heard this in autism a lot. If we only learn the rules of society, we'll be okay. Well, you'll never learn the rules of society because they don't publish them, and there ain't no rules, right?
It's not about learning what the rules are, but why there are those rules. That's the important thing.
And it's learning to be able to be more, and strangely enough, it's learning to be more in touch, not with the social world, but your own experience of things, what worked for you, what didn't work for you, where you would like to make a decision differently, how you make decisions, how you think. That's going to make the difference rather than externally. And what happens is people often are always pointing externally. Well, learn those rules, learn the social skills, learn these things. And it's really learn, give me the opportunity, if I have autism, give me the opportunity to learn about me and how I function in the world and how I make sense of the world.
That's exactly how I feel about that sort of thing. And I think we're going to have to take another short break here for commercials, but we'll be right back. In just a few minutes.
Yeah, we're going to be right back with finishing up. We have about 15 more minutes. We're going to be finishing up our discussion. I'm so excited. I wish we had another like 2 hours to go with this. It's my favorite. Anyway, we're going to be right back with more Understanding Autism.
In today's environment, short sales, foreclosures, and bankruptcy seem to be the norm and not the exception. These events can be devastating emotionally as well as financially. But just when you thought it was over, you might start to wonder about the tax consequences of short sales, foreclosures, and bankruptcy. Tax law can be very complex, and it would be critical to understand the tax laws surrounding your situation. Call Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor at 602-625-3074, 602-625-3074 to discuss your situation. He looks forward to talking with you.
Are you standing at a crossroad in life wondering what's next? Is it time to reinvent your relationship, your career, your life? Whether you're ready for a reinvention revolution or a reinvention evolution, the support of a couple of great coaches can get you there. When you decide it's time to take your life from just functional to optimal, call Joe and Lori Battaglia of Living the Dream Coaches, 888-505-5762. That's 888-505-5762 or go online to www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. That's www.livingthedreamcoaches.com.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking's Understanding Autism. I'm Kim Isaac, and I'm here with my unstoppable Paul Loudon. I'm so proud of him. I was totally gushing over him at the commercial break. I just think about where he and I have, you know, how far we've come as a guiding team. I mean, we're definitely much more of a team, but I'm just so proud of him and really excited. I feel like it's just exciting to hear him share his insights in a very dynamic way. So, of course, I have to gush over him. He's going to be mad at me later, but I'll deal. So we were talking with Dr. Gutstein, and we were talking a lot about family consultation program and the theories behind this and how this evolved and what it means. And we started to talk about the online learning system. And I was just thinking that, Dr. Gutstein, you could share more about that, because I know that that's going to be a key component in the program now versus originally when you started this program. So can you tell us a little bit more about that component?
Well, yeah, it's always been a dream of mine to be able to combine the best of these worlds. We could see for many years that one, our program was taking root in a lot of different countries, a lot of different cultures, all over the world, and there was no way that we were going to get around to all those folks. And we wanted some way. And the other thing about our program and our work is that it's dynamic, in that we want a place where we can learn, get feedback, continually get feedback from professionals, from the families, from the students, and continue to evaluate that, upgrade it, and develop this program. This is not a static program, as Tim will attest. You know, you can come back a year later, and we've learned. We continue to learn. We continue to develop. We continue to upgrade the program. And so the online area is really important. The other thing about the online area is it gives a way for our consultants cannot live in our family's homes. And so if you're teaching parents to guide, and teaching them to guide, you want to be able to be somewhat available so that you can, you know, help that family, give them consultation when you're not actually there. And also, the other thing is, we wanted to provide a way for our families to be able to, you know, find support from each other. We have some very, very capable people, very smart people, very wise people, and to be able to share and develop and become really what we call a community of practice, a continuing dynamic community of practice. And that's really what we've been able to develop here. We have a really nice online system. It does not replace the live system. We really believe you have to have a combination of the two, the face-to-face and the online system. What we've been able to do is provide an enormous resource where our consultants and our family members can certainly communicate, but also so they can graduate, they can work at their own pace, and they can structure the program. The program is structured so that, for instance, all your guiding learning is based on certain goals, certain objectives, certain assignments. You're able to then develop your own pace of learning with your online program to supplement what you're doing face-to-face and what you're doing at home. You're also able to learn from your experience and record what you're learning and keep what you're learning and store it so that you're not continually, you know, trying to figure it out. You're developing yourself as a guide. And we also have a place for families to do that as well, with family knowledge. So there's a lot of different resources that we've developed. It's a really unique system. It's one of those things that's very hard to describe on the radio.
It is.
For people who want to see it, we're going to be seeing more and more of it online in the next few months. So if you'll hold on to Kim's, come back and listen to Kim's and Paul's program, they'll be able to tell you when we've gotten. We're going to be putting models of what we're doing inside. This is a very protected area. Our program, because it is confidential, and so we have people who are subscribers in it, but we are going to be able to develop much more of a public face now. That's our goal, and give a lot of people models of what we're doing, demonstrate what we're doing for people who want to visit and want to have some part of that experience without yet really, you know, subscribing to the whole thing. That's going to be available in the next couple of months, so stay tuned.
Oh, good. I'm excited about that.
The chance to wade before you dive in.
Exactly. A free trial, so to speak. And we'll have that. But we have lots of resources. We have a community center. We have a zone for professionals. We are, as I said, the next year going to be developing a place for knowledge sharing for our more capable students who have moved up in the Dynamic Intelligence Program, which we'll talk about next week.
Yeah, I can't wait. So exciting. One thing I like about the online system, too, from the parent, I guess from feedback from my families, is that, you know, it's a nice way to know that it's available at your convenience to go review and reflect. And, you know, they don't have to necessarily feel like they have to wait till our next meeting. You know, they have the power to go through and have the resources right there, no matter what their schedule is. They don't have to try to make it work necessarily with mine. They can go back and at any time and reflect.
In computers, we call that asynchronous.
Oh,
you don't have to be in sync.
That's right.
I didn't know that.
Asynchronous learning, and we believe in the combination of that asynchronous and synchronous learning. That there's a place to learn with, and there's a place to learn on your own at your own pace. And I think the combination is what makes this such a dynamite program. Yeah,
definitely.
But, yeah, and it's, I think, easy to navigate now. It's not, it's our website and our program. It's not really a website. It's much more complex. It's really a community. Is not just so much like a Facebook type of thing, and it's not just a bunch of experts giving little webinars and lessons. It really is a series of very powerful tools that parents can learn to use so they can become more capable as guides. And so, and it's a gradual structured program which helps you develop. It takes you where you start. And with the consultant's help, you start wherever you need to start, and you take a step, one step ahead approach, piece by piece by piece, towards becoming more competent. Same model that we use for our students with ASD, we use for our parents, which is once, you know, find that edge of what we are able to do, find the edge of your confidence, and then very gradually help you move one step ahead. And our consultants, of course, are trained that way. But also the online system is trained to do that, is developed to do that for you as well, so that you're not forced to do things 10 steps ahead or things that make no sense for you. You're not scrolling around looking for things, browsing around. It's not, you can browse the system, but it's not really made for that. It's made for people who are committed to developing themselves in a step-by-step way. And so what happens is when you're working on a certain objective or a certain assignment, you're immediately made, the resources for that are immediately available. The content's available. You don't have to go searching for it. It's there. The expert knowledge is there. The families who are involved in the same objective are there, right? So, again, it's not running around wasting your time. It's things are delivered to you when you need them, as you need them.
Right.
And I think that's one of the critical pieces, because our families are too stressed out. They have to be running around spending hours a day looking for resources.
Right.
They come to you in this system, and that's the way it's been structured.
It's very organized.
That's something I've been thinking about a lot recently, honestly, is we're working on putting together an Understanding Autism website now, and I keep talking to Kim about the importance of making sure information is available to people in the way they expect it to be available to them, where when they're thinking, I wonder about this, that information is what is being presented to them right now.
And, Paul, you might be interested then in our project here, in our online system, and Kim showing it, because that's exactly how we developed it, is that when you say, I'm working on this objective, this is my goal right now, then the links that are made available to you are links to the resources that are associated with that goal. You can go to other places if you want to for some reason, but you never have to.
Right, yes.
So it's really very efficient now.
And I also wanted just to let people know listening that while this system, the learning system we're talking about currently is for people directly involved with a consultant in RDI, there is just a general public page that gives information about RDI. So that is available at this point. It's www.rdiconnect.com, and you get the overview of the programs, and you also get to read a little bit about read about the programs, consultants, you know, information. I think are the blogs on there? I think you can subscribe to.
There's a blog. There's all kinds of things. There's Twitter, blog, Facebook.
Yeah.
Smaller events. There's weekly newsletters, all kinds of things going on there, and lots of program descriptions.
Yes.
As well. So, of all the things being upgraded all the time.
Yes.
So,
so at this point, that is something the public can access. And as soon as we get, you know, the information that there'll be some snapshots of this learning system to share, we'll definitely announce it on our show and on our Facebook page and our website, which we'll have by then.
Yeah.
For sure.
And just to let our listeners know, yeah, we are planning a website. We're also planning, we're not sure exactly when we're going to be starting this, but we're planning a new YouTube feature where we'll be taking a message, or we'll be taking questions through Facebook or through our show's email address, understandingasds@gmail.com. And each week, once we start this, we'll pick one of those questions and just talk about it for 5 minutes, 10 minutes on YouTube, so that we'll just have it'll be like a small clip of the radio show on user topics once a week. We aren't sure when we're going to be starting that, but we're hoping to be starting that relatively soon.
That's in the works, yes. So we just have a few more minutes. So Dr. Goodstein, I just wanted to ask you if you could leave listeners with a message that you want them to know about, and we have just about 3 minutes, but you want them to know, you know, that's related to your vision and why you've developed this. What would the message be?
Well, clearly the message is one of hope, and it's one of telling, if I was going to tell our listeners, both our parents and our individuals who have ASD, it's that, you know, there is a process, and it is possible to be able to rethink and get a new perspective about what autism is all about and what being a family of someone with autism is about. We don't have to accept anymore the old ways of thinking, that we have an enormous new research base that supports what we're doing, that the brain we know is very plastic and very much open to experience, to changing. The neurology is open to changing. There's not a place where things are too late. We think some parents are told that by the time their child is 3 or 4, too late or something, and they have to do this. That this is not the ASD is not something that you want to be frantic about and feel desperate about. That it is something that every person in the family can learn to focus with, to become confident with, and it's not about just accepting it. It's about transcending things. It's about the family realizing they have the power to help all of their members to have an enormously good quality of life. And that the journey of autism doesn't have to be one of sacrifice. It doesn't have to be one of pain and anguish. It can really be one of a lot of joy and a lot of competence and feeling more capable day by day and making new discoveries day by day. And really, you know, the opportunities a lot of our families have told us is that because we've helped them to slow things down, they've really gotten a whole other experience of their own lives, their own moments, their own what's important to them
yes.
in their lives.
Yes.
And they've been able to really reappraise what, you know, what their priorities are. And they've really... because of
strangely
having this
problem. Sorry, we don't want to cut you off. We're just about we want to hear more. In fact, we will be hearing more on Monday. We cannot wait to have you back on Monday. We're going to be talking about the newest program that involved with RDI Connect, which is the Dynamic Intelligence Program. So, Dr. Goodstein, thank you so, so much for coming on today. And we're looking forward to having you back on Monday.
And I'll be thrilled to finally get to meet you, hopefully, in June.
Yep, he's coming to the DI conference. Unstoppable Paul. All right. All right, thanks so much again. All right, everybody. Again, listen Monday, 3 p.m. Arizona time. We're going to have Dr. Goodstein back for the Dynamic Intelligence Curriculum discussion. Very exciting. All right, we'll see you guys next week.